Turn up the radio and sing along. It's time for another great song. This is the Great Song Podcast.
Season's greetings and welcome once again to the Great Song Podcast. I'm Rob Alley.
I am JP Mosier.
And we're here to talk about the greatest songs in modern music history. We're going to tell you what makes them great, why we think they're awesome, and why you should too. JP, how you doing today, man?
Man, I am doing fantastic. Okay, so folks, as we gear towards the end of the season, year's end, this end of the stage of the show as its current format as we know it, I was thinking back to the time that I met Rob. And for those that don't know or haven't heard the story, he was playing guitar at Church of God Teen Talent, playing a beautiful PVE Eddie Van Halen Wolfgang through 5150, which I now own. And I was like, I have to meet that guy. And what song was he playing, you may ask? Rob, kick a little of the song we're playing that every late 90s, early 2000s band had in their repertoire with the most popular guitar riff of 1999. Rob, tell him what it is.
From the Mount Rushmore of millennial rock, let's start today with Higher by Creed, and we're going to talk to Mark Tremonti. It doesn't get better than that. Man. It just doesn't.
When dreaming in gratitude in all the world, time and time again. At sunrise, I fight to stay asleep, 'cause I don't want to leave the comfort. There's a hunger, a longing to escape from the life I live when I'm away. So let's go there, let's make our escape. Come on, let's go there, let's ask and we stay. Can you take me higher?
Here we go, folks. Rob, so I know Rob normally brings us back in, but Rob, in the words of one of the great speakers of our time, Dr. Scott Stapp, are you ready for what's to come? Yeah. So let me take you on a trip back to 1999. Rob and I were graduating high school, okay?
Yeah.
Toy Story, Austin Powers, and The Matrix were in theaters.
Sure.
Who Wants to Be a Millionaire with Regis was at its peak and the highest-ranking TV show.
Okay.
And Creed owned the airwaves.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
So My Own Prison, their first album came out in 97. I had friends that loved that album.
Yeah.
But nobody knew that they were going to conquer the world with the Human Clay album.
You're right.
That came out in 99 that everyone had.
Yes.
Everyone had this. And today, modern day, Creed is coming back.
Yeah.
And Tremonti is doing awesome solo stuff. He's got Christmas stuff that we're going to talk to him about.
Yeah.
So this guy, Mark Tremonti's had his hand in so many things, and
yeah,
we can't wait to talk. We're going to hear us talk to him about Alter Bridge, Creed, solo stuff. But for today, since this is kind of how me and Rob were introduced to each other,
yeah,
this is kind of how we feel like we should do this.
Yeah, it has to start here.
It's got to start here for us.
It has to start here. But yeah, so but first I do want to say, Mark Tremonti has a new Christmas project that is not what you think it's going to
exactly
be. Exactly. Like, you're going to want to go, you have to go listen to it to fully appreciate what it is. But let me just play you a little bit of the first single off of his Christmas project. This is Christmas Morning for Mark Tremonti's Christmas album, Christmas Classics New and Old.
That's the guitar player from Creed. Yes, that's
little
him.
Little dreamers waiting for Christmas. And now under the tree is a prize just waiting for me. In the morning the snow will be falling.
My brother, this is just beautiful.
Dang.
Come on.
It started snowing in here.
Literal season's greetings.
Exactly. That makes sense.
Our children believe in the glory of Christmas morning.
Christmas
Rob just winked at me and there was a star in his eye somehow. I have no idea how.
Little stockings are filling up with like nuts and oranges and peppermint sticks behind us.
Our bell that we ring just turned into a snow globe.
Hold on, dearly.
So this is crazy. Like, I did not know what to expect. I was like, okay, a Mark Tremonti Christmas album. Here we go.
And it's perfect timing that we're releasing this the week before Christmas for you guys. Like, so there you go.
Perfect timing. And we're going to talk to Mark about the situation behind, like, how this happened. Yeah. It's a really... None of it is what you expect. Uh-huh. None of it is what you expect. Frank Sinatra's involved. It's
crazy. His family. It's nuts.
It's crazy. So
hang around to the interview. You're going to love that stuff.
Yeah, hang around. I know that piqued your interest. So, like, you're going to want to hear how it all happened. But let's start with Higher, because this is an important song to us. Uh-huh. And this is an important song to rock music for people our age. Like, this was a real thing that, like, took over. Mm-hmm. That you're right, that Human Clay album really, really, really went just massively world. Literally, actually, the first time I heard about the Human Clay album, I was not even in the United States. I was in Japan. And a dude was like, "Have you heard the new Creed album?" I was like, "What?" He's like, "Bro, like," I was like, "I've heard the first one." Yeah. He's like, No. "You gotta hear this.
If you liked Karate Kid 1, you're gonna love Karate Kid 2. If you liked My Own Prison, you're gonna love Human Clay."
That's right. Yeah. So let's go back. Let's talk about Higher. It went to number one on the U.S. mainstream rock and alternative airplay charts for Billboard, number four on the U.S. mainstream top 40, number five on the U.S. adult top 40, number seven on the Hot 100 for a hard rock track, right? Yeah. Number seven on the Hot 100. It went to number two on the Canadian rock and alt chart, number one on the UK rock and metal chart. It was the number 13 US mainstream rock song for all of 1999 and the number four US mainstream rock song for all of 2000. It was number four on the US mainstream top 40 in 2000, number 30 on the modern rock track for all of 1999, and number 33 for all of 2000. Like, just
everywhere.
Huge song. It was on the Billboard top 100 for like 57 weeks or something. Crazy. Something ridiculous. You know, it was a massive song. It was the number 11 Hot 100 song of all of 2000. I don't know that it appears on the Billboard All-Time 600, which is shocking. I would love to have had one more. You know what I mean?
One more,
but I don't think it's on there. But yeah, dude, it's crazy. It's such a great heavy riff. Even the production and the mix work on this album, the Human Clay album, is elevated from My Own Prison album. The My Own Prison album is one of those great. Is this a Christian band album?
Absolutely. Till he says this, until on What's This Live For?
That's right. Until we get in the Lord's Name in Vain territory. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Like, whoa.
And even now, so yesterday on the way up, I listened to both of those first two Creed albums back to back.
Yeah.
And you know, you go, obviously some of these lyrics are dealing with faith elements and struggles and you know, whatever. And some of these things just come out when you're writing, right?
Yeah.
You like, you know, whatever. But so obviously there is some, you know, background here. But then this song, Higher, is one of the, you instantly listen to it and you go, "Oh, he's talking about heaven. He's talking about, you know, God, you know, maybe Jesus, whatever." Right?
I guarantee you, youth groups all over the world covered this
100%. I played it at a
Church of God teen talent.
Yeah, a church event. You know, it wasn't like a church service or whatever. But
a drummer and a sax player.
That's
Zimmer
right,
and Chad.
That's right. And I figured I could get away with this. You know what I mean? Like, whatever. And I think we might have said this on the show before, but it's worth repeating because it's one of the funniest.
Wait, we talked with Barnes. He asked how we met.
Stupid things I've ever done. But it was a church denominational meeting, right? The week that we, and so they had this thing where they were spotlighting, you know, young people who do whatever. And so my band that I was with there in the competition, we played, but it was, you know, we were in an area where you were manning the
the music department,
Pathway Bookstore music department.
That's right.
In the, like, the hall where stuff was being presented and blah, 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 blah. And there was a few, you know, a small audience, and they were mostly older people. They're the people who come to this thing
they're
just to
like,
go.
There's chairs. I'll sit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like the benches in the mall, you know, they attract a certain group of people. And so that's who's there, you know? And so me and my two compatriots, we get up there and we, I said, who loves the Gaither Vocal Band? And that's like among our tribe, they're like, you know, one of the peak, you know, groups.
Southern Gospel Quartet.
Yeah, Southern Gospel legendary, you know, whatever. And a few people are like, yeah, woo, you know, light applause, right? And I said the dumbest, meanest thing that I could have possibly said, which is, well, you're going to hate us. And then we just busted into Higher by Creed, you know. And it was, I mean, it's one of those things that, like, as a teenager, you go, yeah, man. Outside and later girl. I go, what a butthole thing to do.
It was great, though.
Like, why in the world would
but
I
But it worked
do?
Because I met him. I was like, I've got to meet that guy that's playing that guitar through that amp. Like, I got to meet him afterwards. And so after Rob's set, he comes down and we chat. And I was like, I go to Lee. He's like, I'm going to Lee in the fall. I was like, no way. That's so cool.
Yeah.
And the friendship was born.
Yeah, what a truly what a full circle thing this song is to be our last, like, you know what I mean, our
full
coverage song that we're doing. So really, really funny that it has come back to this after all this time. We're in the key of D major.
Of course.
Drop D major?
Yeah. I don't know about that.
Which doesn't happen very often. Mm-hmm.
But D makes sense. Everything with it's like it's going to be, and a lot of stuff is in D from Creed. But
The early, especially Tremonti riffs, a lot of them had major key elements. Mm-hmm. At least even he would kind of go back and forth between major, minor, and major. It would be like a heavy riff in minor, but there would be some element to a riff that would be he'd be playing the major third, or even like chromatically playing both the major third, the minor third, and maybe the four in there. Like, he would just kind of hop around. The tonality of it was pretty unique to his playing, especially in that earlier stuff. But I was just listening to, you know, both these albums yesterday, thinking about that, noticing that, like, he would I think about the riff to what's the song on My Own Prison that's the – oh, gosh, why can't I think of it? Is it Torn? No, like the tonality of that riff is all over the place when it gets right. It's very chromatic, and it's Lydian, and it's major, and it's minor, and it's Phrygian, all at the same time, right? In the same riff, it's like all those things. So really, you know, pretty interesting.
And after Rob talks about the theory on this song, we'll talk about Drop D. We'll live there for a minute
because
I got some stuff on that.
So we are in drop D tuning, and we're in D major, and it's just great. Like, this production of this song is a testament to the power of, like, how much it elevates your sound when you double track guitars.
Yeah.
Right? That's really what
thickens it up.
All we're hearing here is drums, bass, and a doubled guitar part. Mm-hmm. And it sounds massive.
Sounds huge, yeah.
Like, you know, and listening to the production of their first album versus this one, it sounds 10 times bigger, right?
Yeah, it's elevated.
And it just makes all the difference in the
and
world.
And it's not that he's playing something much more on a grand scale. It's just doubled.
Yeah.
And the production
it's
is
just
thicker.
Doubled. And the, yeah, it's the, you know, I don't know if the miking technique is different. There's something a little different in the, like, mixing or engineering, you know, that just makes everything sound tougher and broader and bigger.
Yeah.
And it might have just been that they had a bigger budget and were, you know, really, really going for it on that scale more. But this album just sounds massive. Dude.
Absolutely.
And when the drums hit, everything kicks in.
Everything's just bigger.
It's huge. Yeah. Just massive. But yeah, we're in a major key, which you kind of, with that kind of sound, and you go, oh, we're in drop D, you just don't expect.
Yeah.
But everything is, you know, yeah, everything's major. It's happy. It's like, so this, I was saying, this is one of obviously this song's about heaven. This song is about, you know, whatever. But it turns out this song is really about lucid dreaming. I didn't know this until we researched, but, there was a fact or fiction podcast that Loudwire does, and Scott Stapp said that the inspiration for the song, this is from Wikipedia, came from a recurring dream that he had. In the endlessly present nightmare, Stapp would be hunted down and killed by an unknown assailant brandishing a firearm. Once he took up studying lucid dreaming, he was able to escape the gunman and subsequently wrote the song as a memento towards the dream. So he keeps having this dream where he's getting gunned down, learns about lucid dreaming, which is where you can like half awake, mm-hmm. take control of your dreams or yep. control of your actions in the dreams. And, you know, you kind of end up like in a Matrix type situation where you're able to exert some kind of control over the dream. And so it's one of those things where, Christians are the worst at this. We listen to things through the lens of metaphor all the time.
Absolutely.
Right? Like yeah. everything is an allegory. Mm-hmm. Everything yes. is a metaphor. Read these lyrics without metaphor mm-hmm. and you have what the song is really about, right? He literally says the first line of the song, when dreaming,
yeah,
right? Like that's literal.
That's it. Yeah.
He's not like, it's not Martin Luther King. Yeah, I have a dream yeah, yeah. where it's, I'm talking about
it's
a metaphor.
Joseph, the dreamer in the Bible. It's
right.
Like,
yeah,
what
yeah.
he means here is
right.
you're going to have 7 years of harvest. It's like, no, he's dreaming.
No, he's like, actually I'm dreaming. Yes. So he's like, you know, I'd sacrifice all those nights if I could make the earth and my dreams the same, you know, it's just literal. Read yeah. this, take this song at surface value uh-huh. for actually what he's saying here and don't overlay yep. Christianity on top of it.
And Rob's the last person to listen to the lyrics, so let's give him props on this.
Sure,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But, you know, and he's referencing, you know, the place with golden streets, and yep. there is overlap there, but just for what the actual song is about, no, it's actually about lucid dreaming and he, you know, trying to figure out how to make a better thing in his dreams. Mm-hmm. Like, so anyway, I thought that was pretty interesting.
Drop D tuning. Let's talk about just a second. Yeah. We touched on that. I'll let Rob kind of explain what drop D is. It's not that complex. You basically just take your low E and drop it down to D.
Drop it down to D, which gives you an instant power chord in your bottom three strings. You get a D, A, D, you know, and so you get some really chunky riffs that way.
So the earliest I can think of people using drop D, I was trying to think through that. Dear Prudence by the Beatles is in drop D.
Okay.
There's a song called Moby Dick by Led Zeppelin, if you mm-hmm. want to play it. This is kind of like the earliest usage of like drop D in rock that I can think of. I should have had you cue that one up. Sorry. Moby Dick by Led Zeppelin. Yeah.
From Zeppelin 2.
So that's a low D yeah. that they're using right there. So that's in drop D. So, and again, that's more, you know, that's Zeppelin stuff. So it's not this top.
Yeah.
And then like in the 90s, late 80s, 90s, King's X, Soundgarden, they kind of make it magical.
Yeah.
You know, they kind of bring it.
In modern usage.
Yeah, modern usage. Foo Fighter and Nirvana kind of ruined it. Switchfoot made it cool again. I'm just kidding. You know, I just don't like those guys. But they heavy usage of that, you know, yeah. Everlong, that kind of stuff. Creed made it huge,
yeah.
And then Fall Out Boy made it the same, with like sugar going down, you know what I mean, and that kind of stuff. So, but now everyone has a drop D song in their bag of tricks,
right,
in their repertoire.
Yeah, it's very, very common.
So what was not as common, but Creed, I think, magnified the usage of drop D on our level, like where I heard it
yeah.
frequently.
Because everything they did in mm-hmm. this early stuff, you know, was almost all drop D.
Kind of built off that.
Yeah, so a little more into the song. It placed at number 95 on VH1's 100 Greatest Hard Rock Songs in 2009. It won the Song of the Year Award at the 2000 VH1 Music Awards and was also nominated for Best Rock Video Award at the 2000 MTV Video Music Awards, but lost to...
No
clue. You wanna guess? Mm-mm. To me, these things don't exist in the same time period.
Okay.
But it lost to Break Stuff by Limp Bizkit.
Okay.
Which I somehow those things aren't.
You think it's earlier?
I feel like Limp Bizkit was like 2 years earlier, not
sure.
Like a
mid-90s,
decade. You know what I mean?
Right,
I just
that makes sense. Yeah.
Break Stuff to me felt earlier than this somehow. I don't know why. But anyway, so it's on that list of 100 greatest hard rock songs by VH1. It's number 95 between number 94, I Believe in a Thing Called Love by The Darkness, and number 6, Carry On Wayward Son by Kansas,
wow. Okay,
which we covered
company.
In
yeah.
long form. Yeah. The top 10, because you know I had to
Absolutely.
Include that top 10.
Rob loves lists.
The top 10 of the VH1 100 Greatest Hard Rock Songs. Number 10, Ace of Spades by Motorhead, a song that
I hate.
Just don't think about very
I hate
often.
It.
Yeah, I kind of don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, okay, I kind of do, but
I hate it.
Largely, I don't.
Okay.
Number 9, Running with the Devil by Van Halen. Number 8, Walk This Way by Aerosmith. Number 7, Smells Like Teen Spirit by Nirvana. Number 6, The Who, Won't Get Fooled Again, which is an underrated hard rock song. And calling The Who hard rock is funny because it's a little bit contextual.
Sure, yeah.
Right? But
it's his guitar playing. It's Pete Townshend. Well, I don't know if he's a hard rock guitarist.
That's like, what I mean.
Yeah.
It's like good, it's classic rock.
Yeah.
Is it hard rock? You could argue. But I think for the time, what they were doing at the time, makes them hard rock.
He kicked over an amp. He's hard rock. There you go.
That's right. Yeah. Keith Moon was definitely a hard rock drummer.
Yeah,
right?
That's true.
Number five, Enter Sandman, Metallica. Absolutely. Number four, Paranoid, Black Sabbath.
Absolutely.
Number three, Whole Lotta Love, Zeppelin. Number two, Back in Black, AC/DC. Number one, Welcome to the Jungle.
Okay.
Your thoughts?
Metal.
It's hard. I mean, it's hard. Rock. Hard. Yeah. Is it the number one hard rock song of all time?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
All right.
Impressive. Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's number one. I think I'd probably put Enter Sandman as number one. Oh, like that has got to be for me.
Yeah, I think
that's my number one.
And obviously, this is why people make lists, right? Because they're endlessly debatable. Yeah. But anyhow, okay. A little bit on the album, or should we meet the band first?
We can meet them.
Okay.
Hey, let's meet the band. It's time to meet the band. Hey, mama, let's meet the band. Let's all meet the band.
Hey! All right, let's meet the band that is in Creed on this project and this song. Scott Stapp, we'll talk on him for a minute. Vocals. He had three solo projects apart from Creed. He took over frontman of Art of Anarchy after Scott Weiland died. That group is now led by Jeff Scott Soto.
Really?
That's who picked up after them. Okay. So he's in different projects since then. We don't talk enough about Jeff Scott Soto.
Yeah, I think we've mentioned him
some times, but you all should know his name. Lead vocalist for Yngwie Malmsteen. Sons of Apollo, who we talked about with Billy Sheehan and Bumblefoot, Portnoy, Derek Sherinian, Talisman, Trans-Siberian Orchestra,
dang,
Journey. Yeah, he was the Journey lead singer for a while.
That's right.
We should have hung out with this guy.
Yeah.
Like, this guy kind of feels like our kind of hangout with.
It's true.
So he's one of us now. Jeff Scott Soto, thanks for making the making the cut. And then I've got some stuff on Stapp. Well, I'll interject it here.
Okay.
I heard something this week that I'd never heard, which is Scott Stapp sings the national anthem at the Ford 400.
Okay.
So look it up. Just look it up and we'll play it. Okay. I should have had you cue that up or we can. I'd look it up on YouTube probably. Yeah, yeah. While you're looking it up, and I mean it's him. When you hear it, it's Scott Stapp. I forget sometimes that I heard somebody say this, so I can't take credit for this quote. I kind of liked it. Scott Stapp sounds like people that make fun of Scott Stapp.
Okay.
You know what I'm and I personally think this is the most Scott Stapp that Scott Stapp has ever been.
Okay.
On this right here. So okay, let's hear here Scott Stapp sing the national anthem at the Ford 400 after this.
After this word from Mark Cuban.
Litigious society these days.
Oh, say can you see?
That is Scott Stapp.
Yeah.
That is Scott Stapp being Scott Stapp. Okay, we don't have to listen to the whole thing.
Okay.
But
you might want to hear that.
I'll say this about Stapp. His vocals got parodied a lot, right? In the same way that, like, everybody was doing a Darius Rucker at one point. Everybody was doing a Scott Stapp, myself included, right? Creed, in particular, has seen this. We're going to talk to Mark Tamani about the Creed Renaissance that's happening right now, right?
Uh-huh.
Because it did become cool to not think Creed was cool for a minute, right? It was like there was took over the world, and then people start to go, that's too popular. We got to tear you down, right? We got to love to hate you for a minute.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, you know, musically, other things start happening that sort of change the landscape and kind of take over the forefront. But people have always talked about Stapp's voice. But you want to talk about, A, an instantly recognizable voice, and B, a voice that became like the emblem for a certain kind of music.
Absolutely.
You've got Scott Stapp.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
And it's good, dude. Listen to him.
He's a powerful vocalist. Like,
his voice is, it is a powerful voice.
It's thick, it's rich.
He's got range. It has a lot of character.
Yeah.
You know, he just gets, it's just his certain
delivery.
Certain things, the way he delivers, is, you know, people latched onto as that's, you know, anytime you hear an impressionist who's doing something, what they've done really well is they find certain things that are, you know, uniquely characterized to a certain person's voice. And then, they really crank it up to 100. Yeah. And that's what people do with a Scott Stapp impression. But his voice is really like, for this certain kind of music, you know, it is like the icon of, you know, of that kind of music.
Absolutely. And I was going to do actually Stump the Genius, worst national anthems. I was going to do that.
Okay.
But I steered clear of that because Carlos is going to win.
Carlos,
I think, till I found one. Oh. I want you to look up. You may have known this because you're a Chattanoogan. Have you heard?
Oh, yes.
And I had never heard that till yesterday, like 2 days ago.
Oh, man.
Ezra Harris, Chattanooga. There's a, I'll try to tell you which one. But
yeah, I got it.
You got one up on cue?
Introducing the Ungun.
There's
a non-lethal self-defense.
Yeah, this was one that I'd never heard. And I hee-hawed.
Oh, see, can you see by the dawn's early light?
A little background. This is a uniformed police officer. I don't know if he's a captain. I don't know what his rank is, but this is an official thing. This isn't like a crackhead singing the national anthem on the street that somebody recorded.
Yeah, no.
This is at a ceremony, right? And they're who have we got for this? Oh, let's
keep it going. It's about to get magical.
So
the ending.
And the rocket.
Not there, sir.
And there's like, they're showing clips of like people trying to sing
trying
along.
To help him out.
Not being able to.
Yeah.
That the stars were still there.
They sure were.
Or still
yet. Here we go. Bring it on home.
And the home of the free.
I don't think I had ever made it to the ending before.
I was putting together the list, and I found that one. And I was bent over, holding my side. My wife is trying to have a conversation with her family in here, like a serious conversation. And I'm hee-hawing, headphones on. She don't know what I'm laughing at. Anyway, thank you, Ezra, for that. That's precious.
Dude, I got on a whole thing. I made a mistake of talking about it on the internet. But like a couple of weeks ago about the national anthem, and maybe I should save this for a different something, but the future is so close for us. Anyway,
sure.
That how funny it is to me. That, and this is almost a serious topic, so how funny it is to me that we so individualize the U.S. national anthem. Like, part of what we do with the national anthem is to make it as individual as possible and showcase what we can do with it as a singer.
Okay.
Now, not this guy.
Yeah.
But like, but that's, you know.
Yeah, but it's your moment to shine.
Something about, like, I don't remember if it was this way before like the Whitney Houston national anthem. That's like the high watermark of national anthems at, you know, events.
Yeah.
But it's like, how much can I embellish it? How much can I showcase myself in a thing that is supposed to be the national
about
anthem?
Everybody. Yeah.
I was watching this dweeby new baseball thing that they're doing in Dubai.
Yeah.
I think it's Dubai. League. And they were doing they did the U.S. national anthem and they did the United Arab Emirates national anthem, which is where Dubai is located. And the guy from Dubai, they're like, he's one of the greatest singers and he's the star of blah, 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 blah.
He stayed his own.
And he
delivered.
Gets up and does this note for note, very flat.
Not flat like pitch wise, flat like delivery.
Flat delivery wise and dynamically, right? This is the national anthem. And this is how
respect,
it goes.
Respect, homage to it, and do it to the book.
And America, we're like, you know what I mean? Like, how much can I make this about me?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It just cracks me up to no end. And I think about like, you know, like people do like, oh, Canada, right? Like it is what it is. You know how that's going to go. People aren't doing a whole bunch of, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The most you'll hear on Oh Canada is somebody takes the last note up, right? We stand on God for thee, right? Yep. But that's it.
Yeah.
You are not hearing embellishments in like,
runs,
you're not hearing the Russian national anthem. It goes, Mayushki Roshi.
Nailed it.
You know
what
I mean? Like,
good job.
That's it. That people, you're not doing like runs in the Russian national anthem, you know? I only know that because I've seen The Hunt for Red October a zillion times.
There you go. All I know is from Rocky IV or whatever it is. All right. Back to Meet the Band. On drums, sorry. Scott Phillips, like our guest, also in Altered Bridge. Seems like a good time to talk gear, so let's talk about Scott Phillips gear. Evans drum heads, Vic Firth sticks, Zildjian cymbals, DW drums, jazz series. What specs, you ask? I'll tell you. 22 by 18 bass drum, 10 by 8 rack tom, 12 by 9 rack tom, 16 by 16 floor tom, 16 by 18 floor tom. What do we notice? Yeah, two floor toms.
Need that low, that.
That's there it is. There it is. 14 by 16 and a half Ludwig Black Beauty snare drum.
That, he had that snare popping.
That snare sounds great.
Cranked to high heaven.
Yeah, it's as tight as you can get it.
Yeah.
Like it's gonna break. It's like perfect.
This was the era of that really tight snare.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. No rattle at all. On bass, Brian Marshall. His inspiration, among others, Geddy Lee, Doug Pinnick. I mean, I can't go wrong with that.
And a great mean mug. He always had a great like facial expression. Yeah. Like, dude, I'm freaking to kick your, you know what I mean?
Yep. He graduated from Florida State as well, which I was going to ask you. We actually thought about talking about this with Tremonti. Thoughts on undefeated Florida State not in the college football playoff?
I know it's a hot topic.
And we have a lot of people from Alabama that listen, so we're not going to trash your team.
I'm uneducated on it, so I will keep my opinions to myself.
I will say this. They are an undefeated team. They can't do any better than being undefeated.
Right.
The argument is they only put up 90 yards of offense last week. And so,
because like their quarterback is a stud and he got hurt, right?
Yeah, correct. But so they've won the past two games with backup quarterbacks. They're on their third string. And they're concerned about there not being good football in the playoffs.
Right.
But I heard one coach say it great. He's like, are you saying that defense can't win a game?
Right.
Like, can't win a championship?
Right. You're saying
definitively. You always say defense wins championships, and now you have an opportunity to prove it, and you're not giving them a chance to prove it. I thought that was really good. Wow. Anyway, different topic, different subject.
That's true.
And then Mark Tremonti on guitar. Hang around for us with at the end. He's awesome.
Yeah.
Great stories. One little other Creed note. Rob and I were at Lee University when VH1 filmed the Behind the Music on Creed. That's remember that? They were all over campus.
Well, actually, no. The filming of it was before my... Okay. You started a year before
That's right.
It
was the year before
and, you. But yeah.
Anyway, all over.
But yes, Mark... Scott Stapp
went there.
Did some time at Lee University.
Did some time. And good got, way to phrase it.
Got...
he is no longer part of the Lee family.
I don't think he's got that... Lee Flames bumper sticker.
He's not showing up for homecoming.
That's right. And that was always the first. We would always have like a chapel with like ask the president. And for several years,
everybody.
That was always Scott the first Stapp question. Really yes, Scott. Before Scott Stapp went here. Yes. Okay. Okay. A little bit more on Human Clay, since that's what we've been kind of focusing on. And I it's almost unfair to focus on one song and one album when we're talking about Mark Tremonti, you know what I mean? But it's just so full circle with us. Like, this was a landmark album for our generation.
Absolutely.
Truly, that it seems hard not to focus on it. So I did a little research on Human Clay. Looking at the credits, it is credited as all lyrics by Stapp, all music by Tremonti. Mm-hmm. So we're talking riffs, melodies, I'm assuming, like, you know,
that's all
Mark.
I mean,
yeah, so like, it's, you know, and lyrics by Scott Stapp. It went to number one in the U.S., Canada, the Netherlands, and Norway. Number two in Australia. It was the 2002 Billboard Top Pop Catalog Album of the Year. That's basically their Album of the Year award. Certified 11 times platinum in the U.S., 6 times platinum in Canada, 4 times in Australia, 5 times in New Zealand, 3 times in South Africa. It is gold in the U.K. Why? U.K.? What are you doing? And other places as well. I just assume, like, how did this not go platinum in the UK? Yeah. But no, apparently not. It won a Grammy Award for With Arms Wide Open for Best Rock Song and an AMA for Favorite Pop Rock Album, Billboard Catalog Album of the Year. It was number 5 on the Billboard 200 Albums of the Decade for the 2000s. So... of all the albums that came out in the 2000s, Billboard put it as number 5, not number 5 hard rock albums of the decade.
Just number 5 albums.
Number 5 albums, period,
of
the 2000s. That list from 10 to 1 is going a pretty eclectic list. We're starting with Country Grammar by Nelly.
The album?
Yeah.
Okay.
Country Grammar, the album. Supernatural, Santana, Juggernaut.
I thought that would be high.
Juggernaut. Yeah. Number 8, interesting, is One by the Beatles.
Okay.
So,
which is their number ones. It's all
it's
number
a collection
ones.
It's of number ones.
Red with the yellow one on there.
Yeah.
It's the greatest hits album. It's kind of cheating.
That's kind of what, yeah. Like, but, I mean, how are you going to argue with 27 number ones yeah. by the Beatles?
Yeah.
But okay. Number seven, the Marshall Mathers EP. Okay. The Marshall Mathers LP.
LP.
By Eminem from 2000. All these are from like literal 2000. It was like we hit that millennium and we went, we're just going to do different music for a minute. Yeah. It's going to be huge.
Yeah.
Let's see. Number five, Human Clay, 2000. Number four, Come Away With Me, Nora Jones. Okay. For all things, Come Away With Me. You can go back,
hang out with us and Jesse Harris.
Yes, Jerry
Harris. Jerry Harris. That's the Parks and Rec version. Yeah. Jesse right. Harris.
Yeah. Number three, the Eminem Show.
So two Eminem projects.
Two Eminem in the top 10. Yeah, that's from 2002.
Mom's Spaghetti. Then
number two is Confessions. Usher.
Okay, yeah. I can see that because, that. Let It Burn was everywhere. Mm-hmm. Yeah is on that too.
And number
one. My outfit's
one,
ridiculous in the club looking so conspicuous and rar. Loose women all on the prowl. Hold the head steady. I'm going to milk the cow. Forget about game. I'm going to spit the truth. Won't stop till I get them in their birthday suits.
Man.
Give me the rhythm. It'll be off with their clothes. Bend over to the front and touch their toes. Left the Jag, took the rolls, cut and put them on foot patrol. How you like me now? Pinky's valued over $300,000. Less crank, you the one to please.
Wow.
Ludicrous fill cups like double D's.
Double D's.
Me and Ursh once more when we leaves them dead. On a lady in the street. Freak in the bed. Prospectors should do that one.
We should. That's good. That's Prospectors. And the number one album of Billboard of the 2000s is NSYNC. No Strings Attached.
There you go.
2000. There you go. How about that? Yeah, I think that's about what I got. You got to.
Oh, man, I got some stuff. Okay. So the What If False Harmonic, the beginning.
Okay.
I freaking love that. Play a little of that since we're talking about
that song is just mean.
This
dude.
Song is like, this is mean. You're right.
I have a great story on this, actually.
Okay.
You kind of got to let it simmer here at the beginning.
Absolutely. You're like, it's going to be one of these.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
Do you remember the video for this? It was in Scream 3, and it had the video with the ghost face running around all in it. Oh, it was terrifying. It was great. Just added to the meanness.
Yeah. That's so cool.
Nice long intro.
Oh, yeah.
I love an intro that you got to wait
Me
for.
Too. But it's coming. Don't worry. Oh, freaking love that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
And then it's just monster riff.
Absolutely. My favorite song off this album, though, is actually Faceless Man. And me and Rob wrote a song right after this called From Me that I came over to Rob's house, and I was like, dude, I've been listening to this. I was like, let's do something kind of like this. And so we wrote a song kind of based around that same similar concept.
Yeah.
Here's a take. So the next album after that, we talked about My Own Prison, we talked about Human Clay, Weathered album. There are times, and you're going to hate me for this, where I think that Weathered is in the conversation for some of their best albums.
Okay.
And this is where Creed, was becoming huge, but it was also becoming like jokes and punchlines.
Yeah.
So it was before memes, so it was whatever. It was equivalent at the time. But Bullets, My Sacrifice, a.k.a. Higher Part 2. Weathered, Hide, Don't Stop Dancing. One Less Breath was huge, but not my fave. Tremonti played bass on this album. On that album, bass player. So they toured with different bass players.
This
was the one where they did not have a bass player in the band. Technically a three piece.
Yeah.
Couple other things, real quick. Favorite Creed Bratton quote. Here we go. While we're talking Creed, then we'll move on from them. Nobody steals from Creed Bratton and gets away with it. The last person to do this disappeared. His name. Creed Bratton.
Creed Bratton, that's right. So I'll say this for your take on Weathered.
Okay.
This is what I was thinking yesterday about the sort of the evolution of Creed. If you listen to those first three albums.
Yeah.
Okay. The let's see how to put this. The first one stylistically is more varied.
Yeah.
You have grooves and feels and riffs. And whatever that are more widely differing from one another.
Yeah.
Okay.
I see what you're saying.
And it's the product of like It's a young band, mm-hmm. and they're
trying to find their way,
finding their lane.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. And so this is their first collection of material.
Yep.
And it's not surprising that it's a little more varied.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. Human Clay comes out and goes, this is what we are.
Yeah.
This is the template.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then Weathered, it's like that template got just really leaned into.
Yeah.
To it's a like, point that like
there's that's no where, variety. Like,
yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
Like tracks one through whatever, they're all similar.
Right. It's that same mid tempo, heavy, you know, thing, and there's much less variation. And so to me at that point, like that's where I kind of got off the train for a while.
Yeah.
Because it was like, okay, I kind of heard this. That's where I started to feel like
you wanted something different.
Yeah. I was like, okay, I know what they do. And I'm good on the amount of it that I have.
Maybe it was for me that I could just put it on and I didn't care where it was at. Like it would be in the background and it was never a distraction.
Yeah.
I was like, that's kind of cool. Maybe.
Yeah. You know, it's all kind of dynamically. It's kind of the same.
Yeah.
It's kind of a constant,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? And you get it, but that's where, so I think that's where some of that came from that like, you know, it's almost, people almost took it as becoming a like a parody of itself in a way.
I see
you know
what I mean?
So
that's well said.
I think that's for me, those first three albums kind of follow that pattern. And then I was off the train for a minute. And that, of course, that's when you start getting Alter Bridge at that
that's
point,
a good tie,
which
tie
is
in.
Different.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about Alter Bridge. So Miles Kennedy on lead vocals, and then it's basically Mark Bryan and Scott Phillips of Creed. So, you know, and Miles is a monster vocalist, great front man. We talked to Mark that I saw them with Mammoth at the Ryman, and I was blown away with him as a front man. Look up, I told them Broken Wings, if you don't care to play that.
Yeah.
That was my third most listened to song this past year. And Mark says he loves to play this one live. I just love this song. And maybe because it feels Creed-ish with like musically, but I love Miles' vocal delivery on it.
You can really hear, like, that sounds like a PRS.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
Now that sounds like we're using a low B. That sounds like deeper than...
Yeah, so in this one, I'm pretty sure, don't quote me on this. Oh man, let me grab my notes. I can tell you which guitar he's using. I think he's using the H-A-S-E on this, which is in drop B.
Okay, yeah.
And Brett's really worn down, like just... But I want you to hear a chorus, because I want you to hear Miles well for a minute. Like, that guy's got pipes.
Oh, crap. I'm sorry.
You're good. So this is like lights off, hands raised, anthematic. Like it's there in the Ryman.
Yeah, it's arena rock.
In the Ryman, it was so perfect, and it was huge and big. Yeah. And I was like, man, I need to listen to more of these guys. So that kind of got me hooked on them to listen to some more. So, and Tremonti's got other groups too, solo projects. You know, he's got
the least of which is Tremonti sings Frank Sinatra,
right,
which we will talk about, but such a cool idea.
Mm-hmm.
It's a charity thing called Take a Chance for Charity, which the idea of it is getting people who you know for one thing to do something else.
Yeah.
And maybe even try something. That's why I take a chance. Like
yeah.
try something that's out of their comfort zone as artists.
Yep.
And do it and use it to raise funds for charity
Noble
of their
causes.
Choice.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he's doing it to raise money for Down syndrome research. We'll talk to him about that. but such a cool idea, and it worked. Like, it's good. His stuff, you go, there's no way.
No way.
Mark Tremonti.
You see him, like, because you hear him out, on lead black vocals hair, in rock star, foot on monitor, armbands, like guitar way too low. You're like, there's no way that guy's gonna sing Frank Sinatra, but he delivers it.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Like, listen to the, because on in Tremonti you get obviously him on lead vocals, and so then you go, yeah, okay. I mean, you might sing Sinatra, but you're not going to do it justice. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But it's really, it's great.
It's good. Yeah,
it's very fun, and it's like, you know, he said it's like music from the 50s with better production.
Yeah, it's going. He pulls it off.
Yeah, great. And if you like that, the Christmas album, I'm telling you, is going to be right up your. You can put it in your playlist with your grandparents' stuff, you know, with Elvis.
You can slip
Christmas,
it in. And
slip it in. They won't even
notice.
They won't
care. They'll be like, oh, that's good.
What is this, the Carpenters? You know what I mean? Like, what?
Right. How'd I miss that?
Yeah. So, going to be great. Okay. I feel like I have this idea.
Okay.
That there's a Stump the Genius.
There is. Let's do one.
I can't believe.
Let's do it.
Who would have known?
What a concept.
Stump the Genius. Stump the Genius. Stump the Genius. Stump the Genius. Time to stump the genius.
Jump up and say your part. All right, we're going to play Stump the Genius, 1999 edition.
Okay.
So, 99.
Oh, I got this.
Well, I don't know.
Okay, I don't know.
So, I'm going to give you something with a price, and you're going to tell me whether it's higher or lower.
Okay.
You're just going higher or lower.
I'm the answer is all higher.
There you go. There you go. That was no, but they're not. But
okay.
Good tie in there. So 99, higher right. or lower.
Here I've got my tambourine.
Here we go. Disneyland ticket price.
Okay.
$45, higher or lower.
Oh, you're saying, okay. So it's like over, under.
Over, under. Okay. Yeah, okay. This one's tough.
Disneyland ticket
one
price
of the tougher ones.
In 1999.
$45.
I would believe, like, I want it to be higher, but I would actually believe that it's lower.
It is lower. Oh, $41.
And
cannot
now it's like,
that.
I don't know, $1,000 for a day at Disney?
Gotta, you know, sell a kidney to get in.
I'm telling you, I sound like such an old man to say this, but the cost of inflation since in the last 25 years is insane.
Dang, I'm with you on that.
Insane.
In the membrane.
Raise the minimum wage. Okay.
Average price of basic cable.
Okay.
Basic cable, average price.
Okay.
$35.
I'm going to go higher.
It's lower.
Lower.
$31. So
wow.
Pretty close on that.
$31. Can you imagine?
Dang.
$31 for basic cable.
Now it's 100 plus for anything.
If you want to watch any live sport,
yeah.
Be prepared to pay at least
$80. Unless you've got your antenna like us and you just get your three channel. Actually, more on, anyway, whatever.
Yep.
Average six pack of Budweiser.
Okay.
Non-drinkers. Okay. So this is a little tough for us. Average six pack,
$4.25. $4.25. So you're talking about, I'll say higher.
It's lower.
Lower. Okay. I'm sensing a pattern here.
401.
Wow. Okay.
Average ticket price for a Red Sox game.
Okay.
$25.
$25.
This game is tough.
This is in 99.
99.
So before Red Sox were even any good again. $25. Average ticket price. Go higher.
Higher. Congrats. Okay. Give yourself points on that. $28.03.
Wow.
All right.
These are small margins.
Small margins. Keeping it close. Last one. Average cell phone bill. $30.
I think it's probably lower at that point.
It's higher.
Higher.
That, because think, like, I don't know. It's $40. So
yeah,
average
okay.
cell phone bill.
Okay.
Not as many bundle packages, I guess, for cell phone bundling. Right. Yeah, higher or lower. So,
wow.
Mark's brother, Daniel, did the album art for this. I think about the cover art for Human Clay.
Okay.
And My Own Prison. He did a lot of the Creed stuff.
Okay.
Like, that stuff's very visual for me. Like, I visualize that as a time frame, as an era. I
think. Now, if you look at the Human Clay artwork, it kind of looks like an AI prompt.
Yeah.
It has that vibe of, like, you know what I mean? I put in a mud man coming up from the ground.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I like, get what you're saying.
Just has that
it,
look.
Yeah, it comes to that. That's good.
Yeah.
Well, we're not done. We're hanging out with Mark. And then we'll,
Oh, you know something we got to mention? Hold on. We forgot to mention his pinball obsession.
Pinball story. So, yeah, we always talk with our guests for a minute before we start the actual interview the recording process. So we're chatting it up, talking about things. Rob, tell him the pinball story. This is cool.
Well, so you had wanted to talk to him about it, and we just he comes on Zoom, and immediately there's 2-3 pinball machines right behind him.
Yeah.
And so we just go right in on, dude, oh, the pinball. And so he was telling us, like, he kind of got obsessed with it with when he bought his first house, he got a South Park pinball machine.
Yep.
And he was like, at the time I thought it was the most amazing, you know, whatever. And then I realized, like, there's a lot better pinball machines than this, but still. So he started collecting them.
Yep.
And he said he's had maybe 50, 60.
He has 16 now. I think.
And he said he's, you know, over time he's had 50 or 60. But then the other thing that kind of blew our minds.
Yeah.
Was he was saying that he has done the soundtrack music for pinball machines, you know, and he actually has it, which who even thinks about that? Like, I don't think about, you know what I mean? You just hear a pinball machine and old ones, it's like generic, you know, and it's like a 3-bar loop that just keeps going over.
Well, I remember the first one I heard was the that was cool music was like the Aerosmith one. I was like, oh, they're playing Aerosmith songs.
Right.
That's
really cool.
That's Dream On and I'm playing pinball, you know?
Right. So he said that he has it in his album contracts now that the music can be licensed specifically for pinball machines. Yeah. And
so they just take the vocals out and use just the music part.
Yeah. And so there are several now pinball machines out there that have music soundtrack by Mark Tremonti.
That's freaking awesome. So that's, and he had the two behind him. He had Venom and...
Yeah, Venom, which he did. Uh-huh. So if you played the Venom pinball machine, he did that soundtrack. And do you remember what the other one was that he said?
I don't remember what the other one was, no.
I can't remember what he said, but yeah, Venom, and there's another one. Oh, gosh.
Godfather. He did the
Godfather.
He's doing the one for the Godfather.
Yeah. The Godfather pinball. That's dope.
That's
like,
awesome.
That's a thing to put on your resume. I don't care how big a rock star you are. That's a thing that you're going to take a minute to make sure people know that I did the music on the Godfather pinball machine.
Yeah. Like,
that's just dope. So anyway, all right, let's go check out the rest of our conversation with Mark Tremonti, and we'll be back to tuck you in on the other side.
This is the Great Song Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, as promised, we are here with Mark Tremonti of... Pick your favorite band. He is the millennial generation guitarist of a lifetime. Mark Tremonti, thank you so much for joining us today on the Great Song Podcast.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Christmas Project.
Yes. Let's dive right into Christmas classics, new and old, your brand new Christmas project, which led me to discovering, because I had not seen your Sinatra project, but I know they're kind of tied together with their association with Take a Chance for Charity. Tell us about, first of all, let's start with the Christmas project. Tell us about this. It surprised both of us.
It was like, what a curveball. It's a Christmas album. I was expecting like Merry Axmas or something like that. Yeah. But then I looked up Christmas Morning and I was like, holy cow, claymation video. And then, I mean, it goes from there to First Noel. It's vocally driven, strong vocal, choir backing with strings. I was like, where is this side of Tremonti?
Yeah, it's so choices. Very classic.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Tell us about the decision to do just a Christmas album that like everybody's grandparents will love. You know, every generation is going to love this album.
Yeah. You know, when I wanted to do a Christmas album, I wanted to make it sound like it came out in the '50s with better production. You know, when I did the Sinatra record, I got into singing like Frank Sinatra, cause I would sing at Christmas parties to begin with. And I would sing, you know, Jingle Bells or whatever it was. And I was like, you know, this music suits my voice better than the rock thing does, you know, cause I'm always pushing with this. It felt nice to just use my main voice without pushing it. And then I got into obsessing about singing like Frank Sinatra. And when I put out the record, people were like, you know, you should do a Christmas album. So I said, you know what? I should do a Christmas album.
Let's give the people what they want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. So I put together the same guys that did the Tremonti Sing Sinatra record, plus another 23 stringed instruments and percussions, timpani, percussion day, and then we did a choir as well. So, like I said, I want to make it sound classic. I wanted people to remember the good years when their kids growing up Christmas time, at least my Christmas time, felt like how these songs felt.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And a lot of the backing band and such, you had members of Sinatra's surviving band, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, when I wanted to do the Sinatra record, Well, the reason I wanted to do the Sinatra records, I was obsessed with singing like Frank Sinatra for some reason. And then we got a diagnosis that my daughter was going to be born with Down syndrome. And I had read so many books about Frank Sinatra being a huge philanthropist, raising over $1 billion for charity. I was like, you know what? It makes sense. Let me do a record for charity. Let me sing some Sinatra songs. And I called my manager. I said, hey, listen, I want to find some local musicians to get them together to record some Sinatra tunes. He's like, why would you do local musicians? My guitar teacher growing up was Dan McIntyre, who toured with Frank Sinatra. So it's one of those star aligning moments where he sets up a lunch for Frank Sinatra's guitar player and band leader, Mike Smith, and sat him down for lunch, told him what I wanted to do. And they said, you know, that's all good and well, but can your boy sing?
Right.
And he had never heard me sing. My manager had never heard me sing Frank Sinatra style songs. And he was just like, yeah, you can sing, whatever. That's his job as a manager. Right. Yeah. So from there we put it underway. The hardest thing was to get the approval from the family. To put Frank Sinatra's name in record is almost impossible. So there's only been a handful of people that have been able to do that. So I'm very proud and honored to be associated with that name.
It's awesome.
Wow. Can we expect this to be a regular thing as you know, in maybe 20, 25 more years, you're going to go the Rod Stewart route where it's like, you know, Mark Tremonti sings American classics?
You know what? I absolutely love doing this. I wish I had a bigger foothold in that market. You know, I'd love to, tour around the country doing it, tour around the world doing it. I've had maybe six shows as of now. I've got a show in 2 weeks here in Orlando at the Performing Arts Center here. And then we got three shows in January. I got two in Vegas. I'm sorry, two in Jersey and one in LA. So it's or Beverly Hills. But after that, so far I think there's four shows scheduled for next year. I hope we can get a bunch more.
That's awesome. Yeah.
That's what we're here for. We're the foothold makers.
Here to get your name out there. So you went to South Carolina and FSU in college, major in finance. So obviously you're financially sound. In Monopoly, are you playing with the thimble, the top hat, the race car, the man on the horse? What's your piece in Monopoly?
Oh, I like the top hat.
Okay.
You know, and then 10 years later, I become friends with Slash and do a Take a Chance for Charity project.
There you go.
That's fantastic.
Okay, so gear. We've got to talk a little bit about gear for just a second. I know you're pretty much D'Addario strings for the most part. PRS guitars, we can talk about that for days. Your Sunburst with the Floating Bridge and Dragon 2 pickup for Blackbird that's tuned down a half step. And you like your necks shaved down a little bit. Is that true?
Yeah, they're not the same shape as the normal PRS carve. Initially, when I put out my signature model, you could only get them with the larger neck, and so I had them shave it down a little bit for me, and then my friends would play it and be like, "Wow, I love the feel of this neck." So I begged them, can we please, because to change, the size of the neck, they have to reprogram all their CNC machines and get all that. And that's kind of a pain in the ass for them, but they did it anyways. And I love it.
I wasn't going to ask you to like pick your favorite child between like the Dime, the Stella, the Fenton, the HASE. So for sake of that, I'll let Rob ask you or give you a gear idea that he had.
Okay. I have a gear suggestion. Okay. This is, we've never done this before, but I was watching some live footage, from I think it was the Glass Pop, festival from last year. And I noticed that, you like a lot of people, and I'm sure a lot of people would benefit from this. You, when you're singing live, you're right in, your mouth is like on the grill of the microphone. And I just happened to notice, I've never noticed this before, that like your nose was getting a real workout from the top of the mic grill, right? It's like, he's got to be uncomfortable. It's your nose is like always having to get scrunched so you can get your mouth where you want it. I'm thinking we need the first ever artist signature microphone capsule cover that has a notch, for nose comfort. There's got to be a market for that.
That's a video audio copyright right now. We'll take part of the cut.
It's funny you say that because I realize I'm doing that. That's my comfort spot. I like getting right up on the mic. When I was younger and I would sing, I was timid to sing, and I would always back off the mic. And I told myself one day, be a man and sing into the mic. Get right. don't, if you're timid about the way you're going to sing bad. So I told myself, when you sing, mean it. So I get right up on the mic. And I overdo it. Like you said, I get my nose right up on there. In my mind, I'm like, I only notice this. Nobody else does, but you notice it.
Sorry. I don't want to make you self-conscious about it or anything.
Next time he's live, he's like, somebody's watching.
I just think maybe somebody could just take a hammer and just give one good whack to that top of the grill and make a little indentation. Let's get this guy comfortable,
Trelawney's signature series, Mike.
I like it just the way it is. I like digging my nose into it. I when I'm at home, I just did the Charismatic Voice. Awesome singer online that talks about people's vocals. And I did an interview with her the other day, and I was telling her how I like to have my hands when I'm singing in the studio or practicing at home. I keep my hands on my face. I keep some kind of contact so I can feel what I'm doing for some reason. It's almost like another sensory that I need to perfect pitch and vibrato and all those things. It's just kind of like, even if I'm singing in the car, I'll have one hand on the wheel of practicing. I'll have one hand kind of holding my mask, you know, whatever. Yeah,
to like help you feel the resonance, know you're doing it right. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's really smart.
Microphone and having that contact kind of does the same thing for me live when I'm playing guitar with two hands.
That's really interesting. That's great. I love that. Okay. We're in the middle of what I'm calling it the Great Creed Renaissance. Mm-hmm. You guys are kind of really having a moment. You just announced the Summer of 99 tour, and you guys had this. We're big baseball guys, so seeing the whole thing with the Texas Rangers, and they're listening to Creed, in the locker room before every game, and then you guys show up at the World Series. And after you announced the tour, like, they didn't lose another game. It was just great, right? The whole synergy of all that business is fantastic. The unofficial mascots of the Texas Rangers. Does it truly feel in this moment, there's like a big groundswell of Creedness, the new halftime show t-shirt, all of it. Is it really feeling like the summer of 99 again? It really feels exciting.
Oh, it's awesome. You know, it's, it feels better than ever right now. It's, Back when Creed was, when we were back in the between 99 and 2002, we were all over the radio and all on tour and everything. But you had the world kind of loving or hating the band back in the time. I think enough time's gone by now where it's just been all welcome with arms wide open, if you will.
Hey,
there you go.
Oh yeah, so it's been great, man. It's been so well received. It's made us really happy, and it's cool to see that. You know, when we put this tour on sale, you can see the analytics of females, males, age groups, whoever's buying these tickets. And the craziest discovery is that the biggest group of people, I think 35% of the people buying tickets are between 25 and 35.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, we're too young to have been around back when we first started. So it's just great to see a new generation of Creed fans.
Man, that's really super cool.
One random question. I've always got a rando that I throw out there. Wristbands. You're a wristband wearer. I'm a wristband wearer. Yeehaw. Are you sponsored by Under Armour? I noticed a lot of your wristbands.
Got the Under Armour t-shirt on as we speak.
Look at that. That's right. That was
It's just I'll wear whatever wristband I got. A lot of times I'll forget them on tour and I'll have to have my tour manager go out and get them. But lately I've been wearing my Michael Jordan wristbands.
Okay.
I wear them because I have a spot right here on my arm it's almost like scarring right here where when I play live I play hard and I tear up my skin on my arm, so that's why I wear the wristband to keep that from happening. Not really for sweat or an aesthetic thing. It's just it's actually affecting my arm.
Wow, that's interesting.
The favorite solos to play live with either band. So with Alter Bridge, is it Bleed It Dry, Pity for a Dime, Open Your Eyes, Blackbird? What's your favorite Alter Bridge solo to play live?
There's a couple of them. I love playing the Waters Rising solo. The Cry of Achilles solo is a lot of fun. Mm. Blackbird's great, but when I play Blackbird, I can't just say, hey, I'm going to have fun with the solo. Yeah. I know that very important for the band and the fans, so I got to really focus and make sure it's done right.
Yeah,
so it's
if you
kind
do something
of
different, the fans are going to be like, "You're not playing it."
Yeah, so I got to really make that one special every night. And, you know, it's not as fun when you can't just flow and do whatever you want with it, but it's still a lot of fun.
I get it. Yeah. I saw you guys, with Mammoth, at the Ryman. I'm in Nashvillean. So I saw you guys last year at that show, and, they're definite high points of the show. One thing I was telling Rob before, this is a crazy fact that you probably won't hear, you know, you get your Spotify wrapped at the end of each year. My number three song that I listened to the most this year was Broken Wings by you guys. Not the Mr. Song, but the Alter Bridge Broken Wings. Yeah. I love that song.
Oh yeah. That's one of my favorite guitar parts is the intro to that song.
Yeah. It's awesome. Okay. Same question about Creed. Favorite guitar solos or the ones that you're looking forward to playing back out with them? Torn, Bullets, Overcome, Stand Here With Me.
You know, those, you know, there weren't a ton of guitar solos in the early Creed stuff. But some of my favorite guitar work, was from the song Time on the Full Circle record.
Okay. It's a newer one.
Not necessarily a guitar solo, but every bit as hard to pull off as a guitar solo. It's just some of the finger style stuff that, throughout that song. I just remember writing that and, you're like, all right, I'm on to something here. This is something I got to tack. This is something special. And, love it. I think everybody in the band might think that that's our best song, okay. even though it was on a record that, was overlooked to a certain extent. But that's our best song. No, I think we all do. I mean, we've all talked about it.
Okay.
Very cool. When you're crafting, obviously when you're crafting a riff and stuff, you're kind of, you know, workshopping and woodshedding and all that stuff. Are you a guy when it comes time to solo in the studio, do you just get in and rip, or are you sitting with something and working out, all right, here's these two bars and then let's try this and this and this?
No, I'll compose. Okay. It most of the time. I will first demo the song, and then I get in the studio, go through pre-production, get everything tracked, and I will sit at home and I'll just play through the solo 20 times, and every time I play it, I'll say, okay, this is at the top of the solo, this is a great opening part, at the middle of the solo, the reintroduction here, and then here's how I'm going to end it. And sometimes I'll leave a little bit to the, you know, to the moment. A lot of times, you know, you're learning these solos while as you're composing them, and you have to record them like the next day.
Right.
So you have gotten them under your muscle memory. So you'll fall apart sometimes. And when you're falling apart, you fall down that staircase in a good way. You land on your feet, and that becomes the new solo. Sometimes those are the best magical moments that you can capture is those, how am I going to survive this new direction I've gone in?
Yeah.
Friendship with Larry the Cable Guy. How'd that happen? How'd you meet up with that guy? How'd y'all become buddies?
Yeah, back in the day, I met him at his name is Dan, and he okay. I met at a Seven Dust concert. He worked for JRR where he did commercials and whatnot. And he kind of became a local. JRR is a local rock station here in Orlando, and he became he was all over the radio. There was a truck company in Sanford, Florida here, and he would get on and do these commercials that were the funniest thing you've ever heard. And I remember meeting him, and I was like, man, you're about the funniest guy on earth. The next thing you knew, he became this huge star and getting in movies. I remember going to the set of I forget which movie it was, but he was on set here in Orlando filming a movie. And he's just the nicest guy in the world. And you know, we used to play ping pong, we'd go to Benihana, eat dinner, and then play ping pong afterwards. And then
that was going to be my next question. I'm glad you segued into that. So you're pretty good at ping pong. I saw that. I hear Bieber's pretty good at ping pong, and the guys from Pearl Jam. You think, let's say we have a ping pong tournament, Creed versus Pearl Jam. You got them? You think you can take any?
I used to be really good at ping pong, and I haven't played in, I don't know, 15 years. Okay. I've played, but I haven't played seriously in like 15 years. And my son started playing now, and he's 15 years old, and he's killing me.
It's like it's like swimming, though, right? Just jump back in the water. Well, I guess if you're losing to a 15-year-old.
I never thought my kid would crush me, but, man, I am like – I'm on defense the whole time, and he's just killing me.
Fantastic.
Mark, you've been a lot of fun. There is one question that we ask everybody, okay? So you're on tour either with – Alter Bridge or Creed or Tremonti. You're doing your solo work, and you go into a gas station. What is your gas station snack food of choice? And while you're thinking of it, I'll tell you mine. I would get a Three Musketeers bar. When I was growing up, my mom would say you could have any candy bar you want, and it's the most ounces. So I get a Three Musketeers bar. What does Mark Tremonti get in a gas station?
You know what? If I'm just eating candy or something, I'll do Sour Patch Kids and Reese's Peanut Butter Cups.
Solid choice. I mean, what are you going to argue with about, you know?
That's right.
Yeah, very, all right.
That gets both sides. It gets that chocolate and it gets that, you know, the Sour Patch Kids. I used to eat the hell out of those things. I don't have that sweet tooth as much as I used to, but that was my go-to.
That's fantastic. I will. You mentioned Seven Dust, and so
yeah,
before
I was
we go,
tell your story.
I saw you guys. I guess it was 2001, probably when Seven Dust was opening. Saw you guys in Knoxville, Tennessee, and one of the bizarrest and most hilarious concert moments of my life was Seven Dust is opening. And somebody smoking pot. We're down kind of in the pit, and somebody's smoking pot in the first or second row. And the dude from Seven Dust like looks at him and goes, "Man, give me that joint." And you know, he's like intimidating guy, you know. And he's like, "Man, give me that joint." And so they pass him up the joint, and he takes it and looks at it for a second, and he just goes, eats it, swallows the joint whole.
So either he's a great magician and has like a great sleight of hand trick, or that guy's special.
It's funny. LeJean is the he looks big and badass on stage, but off stage he's the nicest dude you'll ever meet in your life. He wouldn't hurt a fly.
Well, I've seen you guys. I saw you in Creed multiple times, and I've seen you, obviously, like I mentioned, with Alter Bridge. I saw you with Jerry Cantrell from Alice in Chains. I saw that tour that y'all did. So I'm excited to get back out, and I know y'all are coming to Nashville in the summer, so we'll be at that one for sure. Anything else that you want to tell our listeners to where to find you, what to be looking for? I know you mentioned your solo shows that are coming up. Anything that we need to keep our eyes for in the Tremonti world?
That's it. I mean, I'm hitting the studio in February for Tremonti. That record will come out after the Creed tours are done. Okay. So, you know, that's the following year. But other than that, keep an eye out for, you know, I'm doing, like I said, December 16th in Orlando at the Performing Arts Center. And then I'm doing the Count Basie Theater in January in Jersey. I'm playing a casino in Atlantic City in Jersey. And then Beverly Hills, playing an awesome theater out there in January. And then we're playing the Down Syndrome, the NDSS Gala in New York City in March. And then we'll hit the cruises with Creed in April, and then the big summer tour.
Are you going to take the MT-100, your new amp, when you're out with Creed? Are you going to have that out on the road with you?
Yeah, I've had that amp on the road with me now for about a year and a half. So okay. It's definitely my staple amp out there.
Dude, it sounds so good. The clean channel sounds so nice. The middle channel dimmed, it blooms beautifully. Like you said, I love it. So it sounds fantastic.
Thank you, bro. I got it sitting 2 feet away from me right now.
There we go.
Good stuff.
And one lucky winner is going to walk away with Mark's MT. All right. That's all. Man, thanks so much for hanging out with us today. It's been great.
And we'll get with Kevin on when we release it. I'll send him the link and everything so he can get it over to you guys. He's been great to work with, so tell Kevin thanks. He's a good dude.
Awesome. I sure will, and I'll see you guys in Nashville.
Sounds good, man. Excellent. See you then, Mark. Appreciate you.
Take care, Mark. Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is the Great Song Podcast.
Oh, yeah! That was Mark Tremonti of Creed and Alter Bridge and Tremonti.
And your Christmas soundtrack for this year.
Yeah, that's right. Your aunt's favorite new Christmas record that she just thinks she forgot about. Yeah. Like, oh, I used to listen to this at the sock hop. Right. That's yeah. So man, so
everybody's
cool.
Getting hula hoops for Christmas this year.
That's right. That's good. That's what Alvin wants. He still wants a hula hoop.
That's good.
He can hardly stand the weight.
Folks, we're gearing down not towards the end of 99, but Y2K is happening. I'm just kidding. But y'all are going to want to let's finish it off next week, guys. Finale.
Next week is the finale of the Great Song Podcast. So,
all good. Well,
not the season finale.
It's
the finale finale.
So just come hang out with us. We're going to have some fun, have some laughs. But thank you to Mark for hanging out with us this week.
That's right. And if you've stuck around to the very end, I appreciate those of you. I got messages from several of you, and some of you I still owe something for sending us
Pauly. We've sent some t-shirts
at the end of the, you know, things. We've sent some digital downloads, some shirts, some whatever. And some of you I still owe something. So we haven't forgotten you. I'm just slow and bad at this, which is one of the reasons that we're ending the show. If you have listened to this point, I want to know your prediction. What's the first song you're going to hear us do next
on the finale
week on the finale? What is the song that is going to be covered
that we've not talked about,
that we've never covered before,
that we've never covered? Yeah, that's a good way to say it. We've talked about it, but yeah. Anyway, where are we kicking it off with?
What's the finale song for the Great Song Podcast? Please let us know. And I don't know, maybe I'll pick a favorite guess, or maybe I'll pick the first accurate guess and send you something.
Send it on, should we put it in public where everybody can see it, or send it to you like?
Send it on Instagram. Just DM me.
Yeah, okay.
Whatever. Yeah.
Send it that's to great. Rob and we'll.
DM us on Instagram at Great Song Pod, or Facebook. Send us a Facebook message.
Yeah, we'll pick a winner.
Or carrier pigeon. Send me
a
self-addressed stamped envelope to, yeah.
Yeah, Lars, we know you listen every week.
That's so right. Fax us that
fax
guess.
Fax us that answer.
Yeah. All right.
All right, guys.
We'll see you guys next week for the grand finale of the Great Song Podcast. Until then, I'm Rob.
I'm JP.
Go listen to some music.